It just occurred to me, I didn't turn on the recording software. So for those of you who missed that little opening, we are talking to Lawrence in Vancouver. Was that Vancouver, Canada, or Vancouver, Washington?
That's Vancouver Island, Canada.
Okay, I see by the little squiggle here you are recording, so we fixed our problem from last week. How's things up there in the Great White North, Lawrence?
Well, it's actually going to be warm this weekend, Harold. Hitting 30 degrees, so that's about 90 in your language.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember like the Celsius that. From Europe. Go ahead.
So listen, you guys, I've got a couple of things. Harold, I remember you mentioning at some point we've got some supporters up in British Columbia. Wondered if you might be able to, if there's any way you could put me on to some folks up here, either in my area or province-wide.
Okay.
And the other thing was, have you considered, or what are the chances in the future of British Columbia or Western Canada becoming part of the Northwest Territory?
I'm very much interested in that. We still have all the seals and the graphics and whatnot for something called Northwest Front Canada. Now, as you may be aware, some years ago we had a very active and very dedicated man up there on Nanaimo Island named Jeff Hughes, who was sufficiently active, so he got murdered by the RCMP for his trouble. That case became infamous even by Canadian standards. Basically, some woman RCMP officer emptied her gun into the man.
Wow.
And so he died, obviously. After that, we had a couple up there in Vancouver. They were very good folks, but she got pregnant, and then they basically had what they described to me as an attack of sanity, and they kind of stepped back a bit. We have not had anyone really active in Canada for that time since.
Okay.
Now, if you want to get active, you need to email me, and we will see what we can come up with to get you going up there.
But as
far as taking in British Columbia and Alberta into the Northwest American Republic, yes, I'm very into that. And if I'm drawling a bit here, I'm kind of watching all the little squiggly things on the screen here. I'm not supposed to just talk. But, yeah, I consider that British Columbia and Alberta are a natural part of the Republic. As I've mentioned in some of my novels, such as A Mighty Fortress and Freedom's Sons, that may be not quite within our reach at first. We're just going to have to see how that plays out. Obviously, at some point, there is going to be a breakup of the North American continent, and that breakup will extend to Canada. I gather that Canadians are even more loosely affiliated with one another than Americans, and I don't think there's any great love lost between the western part of Canada and the east and that shower in Ottawa and so forth and so on. So,
true.
Yeah, I believe British Columbia has a rather interesting political history. You had something called the Social Credit Party out there for a while. They actually, I believe, held power in the provincial government for some years. So I know there is a Western Canada separatist movement. I don't know much about it. I haven't heard much about that for some years. But, yeah, when the time comes, I'm very much interested in basically glomming onto as much territory as we can, because the white race is going to need room and a safe habitat, or a safe space, as the lefty libs put it, to grow into. You need to remind me by email, nwnet@earthlink.net, and I will send you a proper packet. I think I know who you are now. When Canadians and people in Europe ask for intro packs, I tend to send them what I can by email, because not only is the postage to Canada and to Europe for one of these big, huge intro packets, not only is that very expensive, but you have to fill out a customs form the size of a blanket, and you have to stand there and watch while the clerk keys in all the information on that form into their computer. I generally tend to do as much to Canada and Europe by email attachment as I can, but if you're interested in seriously getting active, let me know. Shoot me your address. I don't know if you did or not already, but give me the address. I'll go ahead and I'll make the effort, and I'll give you a proper intro with a proper white book that you can hold in your hands.
Excellent. That would be wonderful, Harold. Yeah. I appreciate that.
Okay.
And I just want to say I have been listening to Stormfront Radio for quite some time.
Mm-hmm.
Learned about you through there in a roundabout way. I have a lot of respect for Don Black and David Duke.
Must have been very roundabout. Well, so far as I know, we're banned on Stormfront. Any mention or any attempt to post a link to the northwestfront.org just gets shot down by the moderators in about 10 minutes. But
By the way, I had a similar experience. When I was checking out Harold, I found all kinds of negative comments about him by various people, some of whom you've mentioned, and it slowed me down. I had to check him out before I decide to come up here. And when I met him in person, of course, I was able to develop my own opinion. And of course, I'm happy to be here.
Absolutely. Well, I actually called into their show and they didn't have a lot of good to say about you, Harold, but I like to do my research and get different opinions from here, there, and everywhere. You seem like you got your head screwed on straight, and I actually might even pop down to Seattle and take you out for dinner one.
Okay, sounds good.
If you're up for that.
Thing you got to remember about all this caca that has talked about me on the internet and all this BS and all the goat dancing, as I call it, it's unfortunate, but in the last civil letter that he ever wrote to me, Dr. William L. Pierce explained to me, and I knew he was right, that the main problem with all this BS flying around in the movement is that we're all chasing the same buck. Now, the reason that people like the Stormfront crowd and others have a problem with me really isn't about anything that went down in the 1990s or anything like that. What you have to understand is that the Northwest Front is the competition. Every time somebody slips $10 into an envelope and sends it to me, that's $10 that they're not sending to Don Black or Alex Linder or some little clan group or whatever. And we're all chasing the same buck, and it is a shrinking buck because white people are growing poorer and poorer and less able to muster the disposable income to adequately finance a political movement. The solution to that, to my mind, is to widen and broaden our base. This is what we're doing with our official supporter status. When you understand that you're not going to be able to get a lot of money from a few people, we're going to have a situation where we're getting a little money from a lot of people. I know we have a lot of people who badmouth the idea of a mass movement. Well, frankly, we're going to have to go there. If for no other reason, then you have to be able to finance a proper political movement of any kind, revolutionary, kosher conservative, what have you, and that means money. In a way, I'm becoming kind of like any politician. I spend a lot of my time trying to raise money. And whether we like it or not, money is a form of power, and it's the form of power that we have to use for the time being. A lot of this mess that you see on the net about me, it gets back to that. Basically, they're trying to nobble the competition. It's unfortunate. And I'll tell you something else. You have to understand something about the Northwest Front and the Northwest Imperative. We have the idea that we'll succeed. And all of these other groups are distinguished by one common denominator. They don't have a plan. We do. And that rattles the hell out of them and increases the level of goat dancing, because the simple fact is we can show people, okay, we want to do this, we don't do this, we want to do this, here's a proposed constitution, here is so forth and so on. And so it's unfortunate that we have to go through this, but, you know, what can I tell you? It is what it is.
Well, I mean, I enjoy Don Black's show and whatnot, but it is a talk show, and talk is just that. And you guys actually have a real plan, and realistically, is U.S. or North America ever going to go back to the way it was? No, not likely. Not like it's going to break
not
up.
Not in any lifetime that we can imagine.
So the only other option is to get different sections for different people. It's just the way it's going to end up going.
Well, that's what's going to happen. It's not like I'm sitting up here conspiring to make the United States fall apart or anything like that. This is an inevitable historical process.
Exactly. And the Southwest is already gone. It already belongs to the Hispanics. So it doesn't matter what kind of a border you have running through it or what you call it. The population represents the power of the situation. Who's theirs? And these guys, like I've been listening to, they just don't want to seem to admit that. And it's talk, talk, talk. And it's an interesting show, and I like it. But really, there's no solution. It's just talk, talk, talk. You ever see a time when the South is going to be all white again?
Not without a bloody, bloody war.
Well, let's avoid that. Let's avoid that, right?
Well, we might not have a choice, and if it were demanded of us that we make that choice, we might not have the capacity. See, this is the main problem with the whole all-America idea. Really, what are we going to do with all these non-whites and all these faggots and all these strange liberal Democrats and all the other weirdos and undesirables that have built up in this country over the past 70 years? Are we going to chase them down south of the border with sticks or what? Realistically speaking, the only way that this country could ever return to the world of the Brady Bunch or whatever would be through a massive war of ethnic cleansing. And I obviously don't talk too much about stuff like that because anything I say would be just used against me by the liberals or whatever. But the fact is, it's not possible. We will never again have that type of military capacity at our command with a large, well-equipped, well-armed, and loyal white racial army that would be willing and able to undertake something like that. It's impossible. The American continent as a whole is gone. It's lost to us now. The only thing we can do is take back part of what we once had, part of our heritage. Now, it's, I suppose, possible that once we get the Northwest American Republic and we can raise a few more generations of white children in economic and spiritual safety here and get our numbers back up and the rest of the continent collapses into Negroid booga 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 and salsa music and what would happen if the white men's withdrew. It's possible that at some stage, maybe in 100 years, maybe in 150 years, we could go back and kick the door in and take it all back. But even then, when that happens, we're going to have to do what has to be done, and it's not going to be pretty. So,
and if that can even happen at all, it's a, like you say, a long, long way off.
Yeah.
For sure.
I don't know if you've ever read the fifth of the Northwest novels called Freedom Sons, but I describe the kind of situation that, in my opinion, would arise once the Northwest American Republic achieved its independence. And basically, that's what the book is. It's the first 50 years of the existence of the Northwest American Republic.
I haven't got into the novels yet, but I plan to, and that would be the last one to read, right?
Yeah, the order in which they were written was Hill of the Ravens, Distant Thunder, Mighty Fortress, Brigade, and Freedom Sons. You might want to start with the Brigade, then go to Distant Thunder, Mighty Fortress, and Freedom Sons, and then as kind of a chaser or dessert, go with Hill of the Ravens.
Okay.
Hill of the Ravens was the first one written, like I said, and so there's a lot of that's not in there that was in the rest of the mythos, so it's kind of the redheaded stepchild at the moment. Most people like them all.
Oh, I think, I've heard some excerpts on tube. And what's the gal's name that does the book reviews?
Gretchen.
Yeah, now those are really interesting. You know what, I've been trying to find March of the Titans.
Mm-hmm.
Everywhere I go, I run into a roadblock.
Yeah, by Arthur Kemp, yeah.
Yeah, I guess I'm going to have to go online or maybe onto Abe Books or whatever, but no one's got it, and it's almost like, that's strange, it's not available.
I've got a big, huge hardback copy with a nice, glossy hardcover. I don't know when it was printed. I'm sure you can find it online in PDF form, something like that.
Yeah, I mean, I want to get a hard copy, but it's just that every bookstore I've gone to, they're kind of squirming, funny look comes over their face, and that's strange. It's not even available, or it's been discontinued by the distributor or something.
Well, do you know how to... obviously, you must have internet access, but do you know how to use Google, and you can just Google the title, but there's a very good site called www.alibris.com, A-L-I-B-R-I-S.com.
Okay.
Almost any kind of out-of-print book, rare book. I mean, I've gotten things like White Power and various other racial texts on Alibris.
Wow, okay. That's a good one. Good to know.
I don't even know if Arthur Kemp's still alive, but I know he moved to Britain eventually. He left South Africa, but it could be that the book is just out of print. But I'm sure that somebody has put it up on the web, or somebody can give you a PDF of it.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. It's just, it's a classic I want to have a hard copy of, and I just keep running into funny situations with. Anyway.
You can always cheat. Get your PDF, load it onto your hard drive, and then raise your PDF, and then just load your printer up with about a ream of paper and print yourself off a hard copy.
That's right. Buy a binder. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I have a question for you before you go. What is your take on the mindset of most Canadians with regard to what we call white nationalism? Do you think that they're close to accepting it, or do you think they're so indoctrinated that they just reject it without thinking?
Well, it's kind of the old story. Rurally, those folks, I think, have some sort of common sense, and yet the rural folks aren't exposed to the immigration issue very much. But the West Coast, right, Vancouver, Victoria, is basically, well, you know, right, same in Seattle.
I gather Vancouver is basically Chinese now.
Basically it is. So now, in that situation, people are starting to wake up, I think. They're getting fed up. There's a little bit of action here and there. For example, in Richmond, B.C., there was an issue with some people going around and saying, well, we can't read any of the signs here anymore. And there was some kind of a legal challenge, but it didn't go anywhere. Because anywhere you go in Richmond now, all the shops and stores are all in Asian. All the signs. So that sort of thing. But not a whole lot going on. We have a group up here called Immigration Watch Canada, based in Vancouver. They put out some pretty good stuff, literature and information and whatnot. So there's generally an awakening up here that the immigration issue has gone they're going way overboard with it, and it needs to change. It needs to slow down or stop.
How's things going with the human rights tribunals up there? I haven't heard too much from them recently. Is Richard Warman still running around suing everybody in sight because of his hurt feelings and demanding money, 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 money?
He's out east, I believe, and I haven't heard him. I don't think he's up to his old tricks like he used to. I knew a fella that had a website with all kinds of alternative and conspiracy stuff for sale who Richard Warman was going after, but I think he's kind of changed his tack a little bit. But Paul Fromm is a free speech kind of guy. I kind of like Paul. I saw him at a conference a couple of weeks ago. He brought a gal named Lady Michelle Renouf in.
Of Michelle Renouf, yes.
Okay. So, like I say, I like to kind of get my information from all kinds of different sources and then make up my own mind. If someone starts dissing someone to me, I'm saying, well, I take that with a grain of salt, and I kind of want to research and explore and listen to what they have to say, which I'm doing with you folks. I'm doing with Paul Fromm, Don Black, David Duke, etc. So we kind of all got to stick together despite our differences. But I think you're right. Fundamentally, it's too bad there's competition among us, but I think it's sort of the nature of our species in a way too, right?
So. I've noticed this about the movement in a weird kind of way. It almost resembles medieval politics. I think there's some kind of political or competitive instinct in Aryan man that demands that we can't just sort of create a government or a state or a society and then enjoy it. We just have to engage in all this strange little intrigue and messing around and conspiracy and trying to do each other down and stab each other in the back. I don't know. It just seems almost instinctive or hardwired into Aryan men to turn high politics into a high-stakes game. And, of course, sometimes it really does become a high-stakes game, as in World War I or World War II. But it just seems it's a part of who we are and what we are. It's almost like we can't content ourselves with conquering and controlling and utilizing the mass of undermen, the non-whites and whatnot of the world. We have to have a white enemy. We have to have a white competitor. We have to have another white man that we can hate and do down. This is one reason that the Irish went down so easily. They've been fighting the British for 800 years with great vim and vigor, and the minute that these Nigerian and African niggers started coming into the country and taking over the Moore Street Market and taking over all the taxi cabs in Galway and whatnot, it's like the Irish were struck just as dumb and cowardly and trembling as everybody else. No. We can't criticize. That would be racist.
Yeah.
These are the men who have just fought. When I was over there, they were butchering one another with bombs and guns and every other darn hurley sticks and every other darn thing. As long as it's another white man, they'll kill him, but not, they won't lift their hands to defend their country against a non-white.
Hard to say if it's sort of an innate genetic trait or weakness, or whether it's a result of the Zionist propaganda that we're all under constantly, right?
I'm always disappointed. I thought for sure South Africa would fight because, I mean, my God, those people have lived with Kaffirs for 300 years. They know what's going to happen if they try and turn their country over to those slopes.
Oh, I know.
And it's just
bizarre. Wow.
I noticed this happening when I was over there, was that they'd be sitting at the bar moaning into their Lion Lager or whatever. Oh, it's inevitable. Winds of change are coming through Africa. It's inevitable. Oh, crap.
That's crazy talk. Hey, guys, yeah. I got to head off to work, right. So I'm gonna let you go. I'd love to talk more, but...
Okay.
Thanks for calling.
Great to meet you, and like I said, maybe pop down. I'll send you an email, Harold, if you could send me a hard package.
Yeah.
That would be awesome.
Send me a mailing address, and I'll go ahead and...
Yeah.
I'll jump through all the hoops, and I'll get you your intro packet.
I'll send something your way, and maybe even come down and take you out for dinner one weekend. Okay, guys, have a good evening, eh?
All right.
Hey.
Take care now. Bye-bye.
And we now have no callers. We've got a little sort of hiatus in our calls here. I guess nobody's interested in talking to us today, but we did have Lord Lucan wander by, so see what he has for us today.
Well, I was looking on the internet, and on it there was this talk about the most dangerous cities in the world. Most of them are all in places like South America or Mexico or places like Cape Town. Detroit, of course.
Yeah.
Baltimore, yeah, was mentioned. The one in Louisiana, what's that one? New Orleans. Yeah.
Any place in the world with a large black population is going to be dangerous.
Yeah, that's about it, really, for that particular thing. Well, let's get back to some of that framing stuff. I got a letter today, and I read it, from Bill White about pedophiling and stuff. And it appears not just on that, but Veterans Today did the same type of article that they were talking about.
Oh, by the way, I did hear from somebody who talked to Bill White earlier today. He had his hearing in Chicago today. And, as I can understand it from the secondhand source, we've got some passably good news there. He's had a lot of his convictions vacated, including the one that's kind of the load-bearing wall of his whole case, the one where he published information on the internet that anybody else could have found in 60 seconds with Google if they'd wanted to. But because, according to the ruling of a Jewish judge, Bill White had a inherently criminal and violent audience, he was not allowed to publish that information. And that is the one that one court finally threw it out. They released him for about 14 months and then rearrested him on the same charge. And he's back inside now. But apparently the hearing he had today knocked down a couple of those ridiculous cases because of this Ilonis decision in the Supreme Court that basically ruled that what Bill White was accused of doing is not a crime. But rather than just let him go, now they're going to apparently hold him in Chicago for a few months to figure out whether or not they want to retry him by slightly rewording the charges. But then he's still got to deal with this crap in Roanoke, Virginia, and that's the one where the sentencing judge at his sentencing stated that, in his opinion, Bill White was innocent and he was being persecuted for his political viewpoints, and then proceeded to sentence him anyway. That's what gets me, but there is at least some good news there. It's probably going to still be a couple more years before Bill has even a chance of getting released, because, like I say, rather than just admit that, hey, we screwed this whole thing up, Bill, number one, didn't do all this stuff, and number two, even if he did, the Supreme Court says it's not a crime now, so what the heck, let's just let him go. Rather than do that, they're going to try and retry him on all these stupid charges, which I presume they will refile or re-indict him on by just kind of changing the wording in the statute number a little bit, because, I mean, it's just obvious the man's being persecuted by the system. Some asshole in the Justice Department has decided that Bill White is going to die in prison. I think it's because of that magazine cover he almost published. He disagrees, but the fact is, it's reached the level of sheer insanity. Now, yet it still goes on and on, but apparently, like I say, he got a little good news today.
I wonder if we should create a little segment for these RFNs, the standard ones or the call-in ones or both, where we do a parody of the news or a parody of the Jews news of the week or something like that, or nigger news of the week, you know.
Yeah. I can do more Dr. Seuss parodies.
Oh, yeah, they're great. That was perfect. It sounded like something Dr. Seuss would write in secret, of course.
No, there's no rhyme or reason in enforcement of the so-called law these days. I think we make a mistake when we expect consistency and expect for these people to obey their own rules. They don't, and they won't, because nobody makes them. See, this is the problem with everything that's happened in recent years. Obama and the Democrats have discovered that they can get away with this stuff, and then nothing will be done about it. The main thing about November the 20th, 2014 is not that Obama did this, but that nothing was done about it.
You need to fill me in. What did he do on November the 20th?
That was when he legalized all the Mexicans and effectively abolished the border.
Lost the Constitution.
Yeah.
Bypassing Congress and ignoring it.
Yeah, and Congress did nothing. That was what killed the country. Not what Obama did, but what Congress didn't do.
Well, what about this TPP thing?
Yeah, that's interesting. I kind of suspect that that might be the payoff that Obama offered to the Republicans in order to lie down for his little coup d'etat back in November. He said, look, you guys don't give me grief about all this business of turning the country into Latin America, and I'll give you this wonderful trade agreement that'll, in essence, give away the rest of the store, but millions and billions and billions of dollars in Chinese yuan and euros and everything will just flow right into the bank accounts of all your corporate buddies and sponsors down in Houston or wherever. Basically, I think the Obama trade deal was the bribe to the Republicans to do nothing about the fact that he sees power and has become a dictator. He's a generous dictator. He's spreading the wealth around. I think it's interesting that the Republicans, of all people, are now supporting this secret treaty that nobody knows what's in it, and the Democrats are opposing it. Because basically their sponsors in the unions and the government bureaucracies don't like it because they don't know what's in it, and they figure their bennies and their goodies are going to get affected.
I thought on that one, I thought Bernie Sanders read what was in it in Congress or something.
Not out loud.
Not out loud.
No, not loud enough.
A number of congressmen have gone to the room where they can go and read it. They're not allowed to copy it. They're not allowed to download it electronically into a thumb drive or anything like that.
Which, that in itself has got to be unconstitutional.
Yes. And if you're familiar with John Rappaport, he made that very same claim in an essay he wrote recently, asking, where is the authority in the Constitution to keep legislation like that secret? In particular, where in the Constitution does it allow the executive branch to block congressmen and senators from reading legislation that they are presumably debating and voting on?
Well, it's whatever the dictator can get away with. And it's just like I've said, the problem with the entire federal regime right now is that they've discovered the fact that they don't have to obey the law, and that if they don't, nothing will be done about it. You know, why not? If they want to go shoot some guy to death in his apartment in Florida and pump 10 bullets into him like they did that poor Chechen bastard, they just do it. If Obama wants to open the borders and let 32 million illegal aliens in, which is how many green cards they printed, why not? No one's going to say boo to him. You know, there's no deterrent, there's no consequences. The simple fact is, we, the people, have no way of forcing our government to obey their own laws other than the one method which their founding fathers bequeathed to us, which is the Second Amendment, and we're too shit scared to do that. So basically what's happened is the Democratic Party has figured out that the white man is never going to revolt, and they can do anything they want, and they are.
Well, one white man did do a revolt.
Yeah?
All by himself.
That Kid Roof. I've explained last week on RFN how I feel about that, and that was quite sincere. But, yeah, and I'll tell you something else. There are going to be more of those. What puzzles me about that Dylan Roof thing is, like I said, it's us. Why do we find it so hard to believe that a young white man could simply have just had enough and pick up a gun and just start blasting? Regardless of what you think about that particular method of protest, why do we find it so difficult to accept that it happened? Why are we making up all these strange conspiracy theories to try and blame it on George Soros or the CIA or some weird plan by the Bilderbergers to take down the Confederate flag from the South Carolina Capitol? I don't know why they bother to fly the Confederate flag in the South Carolina Capitol anyway. South Carolina is now a majority non-white state.
I think the answer to your question is because it's so damned unusual.
Mm-hmm.
that's why people are coming up with kind of far-out explanations for why he did it. Because, my God, nobody does this sort of thing. Mm-hmm. It's extremely rare. So people are searching for all kinds of possible explanations. If it occurred frequently every day or every week or something like that, then people would accept it as more or less normal and explain it with more or less normal explanations.
Mm, yeah. White boys fighting back? That doesn't happen. What's up with that? You know, that may be it. I tell you another thing, as I mentioned on RFN, these lefty bloggers, you can tell in their just hysterical screams, not only they're filled with hatred, but they're afraid. They, I think, have kind of seen the handwriting on the wall. That's always why they've been against guns and always why they've advocated gun control. It's because they're afraid those guns will one day be turned on them. Now, it's weird. It's only happened once. And that was when that Congresswoman Gifford got plugged a few years ago. Turned out the guy that plugged her was a Jew. The Jew's family went to her own temple. The guy was one of her friends on Facebook, which, so there's obviously something more there than what was going on. I got no objection to conspiracy theory when there is some evidence that there's something weird going on. And in that Loeffner, Gabby Giffords things, yes, there was definitely evidence that there was something off there. But in this case, so far as I can tell, the Dylann Roof thing is just what it appears to be. Like Freud says, sometimes a cigar is just a cigar.
Let me get back to a different thread. I did send you an email of some of what was connected to Roof. I talked about the two cats are an endangered species. One of them is the leopard and the other one is the cheetah.
Hmm?
And the reason for that is because they're lone hunters. They hunt alone. Whereas other animals, the hyena and the lion, are not endangered, but they hunt as a group.
Yeah,
and therefore the group survival is better than the lone wolf thing. The lone wolf idea is more or less a suicide idea.
Well, people in our wee little movement, I think, came up with lone wolf as one of the many excuses or, one of the many ways to explain away our inability to get our act together and to act in concert and to build a proper party. We shouldn't be having to mess with all this rubbish that we've been doing for the past 20 years. We should be able to create a normal, everyday political party with dues and a staff and buildings and everything like that, but it just never seems to work because once we get beyond a certain point, and that's not a very advanced point, once we hit a certain point, basically where we have to interact in any groups larger than about 6 or 8 people, we start to squabble and split into little factions and start to intrigue against one another, and it's just ridiculous. I cannot think off the top of my head of one major white nationalist organization, maybe a few skinhead gangs, that have actually been broken up by the police or the FBI or the U.S. attorney, prosecution, anything like that. We always implode, and we always fall apart on our own, and it's become so obvious that we've been dreaming up all this stuff down through the years, like leaderless resistance, and lone wolf, and my own loosey-goosey, and everything, basically to make a virtue out of a necessity, explain away the fact that we just can't work together, we won't, and we can't get our act together.
Yeah, but back in the 30s, the 20s, so that's when it started. The Germans were able to...
Yeah, well, that was a different time, different place, and different kind of people.
The situation. The situation was a huge number of German men had been in the military, and these are the people who formed the backbone of the resistance to the anarchy, to the communists, and who also provided people to the NSDAP when they formed. So that's one thing they had. They had people in extremely painful poverty and related situations, and there was active agitation on the part of the communists. The big names, big mainline things like Hindenburg, for example, had been tried. They'd been given their shot at governing the country, and they'd failed. And so it was a special situation. Interestingly enough, we're approaching that situation here in the United States. Clearly, mm-hmm. economically, things are getting worse and worse. The immigration problem is getting worse and worse. Black crime is getting worse and worse. Rioting. You look at people who are being put up as candidates. I swear, they're worse and worse. I think Hillary's worse than Bill. It goes on and on. So we're moving in the, quote, right direction, and just how much further we have to go before we hit the sweet spot, if you want to call it that.
Oh, it's definitely worse.
It's worse, and also I think more and more people are becoming receptive to our idea. The popular mind, even if it doesn't agree with us completely, is definitely moving in our direction. That's my opinion.
I don't think we've had an actual president of the United States in the traditional sense since about 1986, when Reagan started to go senile and started to spend most of his days in the White House napping and chewing on jelly beans, and Nancy Reagan and George H.W. Bush more or less ran the country. And you may have noticed that ever since then, the presidents, their quality, their character just gets worse and worse and worse. The scandals get worse and worse and worse and more ridiculous. You got George H.W. Bush, who was just a total puppet of the corporate oil interests in Texas. Then you had that god-awful disgrace of the Clintons, and they were more farce than tragedy, I suppose, because of all their things ranging from sex toys on the Christmas tree to the Monica Lewinsky and all the nonsense that went on back then. But it wasn't really funny, because the whole office of the presidency was being trampled. And then you got that god-awful lunacy of 8 years of Jugears Bush, where you had dispensationalists in the White House who were doing their darndest to try and start a nuclear war in the Middle East in order to make Jesus come back. And finally,
and we also had the psychopath Dick Cheney.
Yeah, true. You've also then got, of course, Barack Obama, who became kind of the one that finally made the move and seized power in 2014. And I can tell you right now that even if through some fluke a Republican is elected in 2016, he just won't find it really convenient to revoke all that Obama era, all those executive orders and all those extra powers. And I have to admit that it was Bush who started the business of ruling by decree through executive orders. But the next president, if he's a Republican, he'll just have to say, well, I just can't do anything with Congress. I've got to rule by executive order. And of course, we've already shown that nothing's going to be done about that. So I think when the U.S. finally died and gave its death rattle on November the 20th, 2014, I think that was probably pretty much it. I don't think there will ever be a return to the true form of the republic, put it that way. From now on, we're going to have a succession of presidents who are worse and worse, and who will rule by executive order.
Well, what do you think of these ideas of separation, like Texas or Utah?
Well, it'd be great if they'd actually do it. The so-called Republic of Texas got raided a few months ago, and what happened was their method of proclaiming Texas's independence was to go to court and file all these ridiculous false liens and quasi-legal papers and try and clog up the court system, which is against the law. And so everybody from the Texas State Police, the FBI, to the Texas Rangers raided some little dinner they were having and took all their phones, raided their houses, took their computers. And they're going to be messing around in court on that crap for the next 10 years, even if none of them go to jail, just purely for filing quasi-legal papers with a clerk of court. Look, I know I'm limited in what I can say here, but we all know there's only one thing that's going to work, and we don't have the balls to do it, so why mess with all this other rubbish? There are things we could be doing, I suppose, by the way of survivalism or whatever, that would actually be of some use. If we're not going to fight, okay, fine. If we accept the fact that we're just totally useless, we're too timid and weak and frightened to actually resist, I suppose we could start preparing for what might be coming. But wasting your time and risking prison and wasting thousands of dollars in attorney's fees for filing stupid papers with the courts?
What about, couldn't they put secession on the ballot?
No, because that's democracy. And democracy doesn't work. It will not be allowed to happen. You got to remember, the purpose of democracy is to prevent change, not to facilitate it. everyone keeps coming up, well, can't we do this and can't we do that? Can't we do something that's not dangerous and won't bring bad men with badges to our doors and won't get them dragging me out of the house at dawn and beating me in the head with a rifle butt and burying me alive in an orange jumpsuit?
Reason people are saying things like that is because they are not hurting enough yet to be willing to take those risks. Just like Germany in the 20s, it was very painful for the people living at that place in that time, and until it gets very painful here, people are not going to be willing to take those risks.
It's getting there. It's getting there. I'm sure you've noticed, for example, when we were growing up, white people lived in houses. Who does now these days? I kind of, you know, like I'll be driving through some kind of nice neighborhood, and I will wonder, really, who is actually living in these houses, because almost nobody I know is, because we can't afford it. Ordinary, normal, working white people cannot afford to own a house. They're living in double-wide trailers, or they're living in cheapo apartments. The pain is growing. It started in 2008, and that was probably about the last little burst of pseudo-prosperity we'll ever have, but it was bad even before then.
Yeah, and we also, like the Germans did, have a large reservoir of professionally trained ex-military men. Mm-hmm. So there is some similarity, and we are moving in that direction. I certainly agree with you on that.
Yeah.
It has to get worse before it can get better.
Well, that's been our mantra for the past 40 years. And, you know, I know people come to me and I know a lot of our own people are getting kind of tired of hearing it. They say, well, when, Harold, when? Just how bad does it have to get? At what point does this endless putting it off until things get worse? And see, we have this vision in our mind that at some point something's going to snap and all of a sudden we're going to have a Third Reich-style situation and there are going to be thousands of white people marching in the streets with torches and whatnot, and there'll be a big crowd that we can hide in. And we can be part of this big, huge movement and not have to take any risk and not have to stick our heads up over the parapet and not have to draw any fire and not have to go first. I'm convinced that if we ever could get some movement built up that had some adequate funding, could, if nothing else, could hire some people, pay some people to do things in public, and all of a sudden it looked to the masses of white people like somebody was finally going first and they didn't have to take that risk, then all of a sudden the dam would break and then we would have our thousands of people in the streets because somebody else has already gone first. And somebody else has gone first in sufficient strength and with sufficient evidence of money so that they can, in the minds of white people, they can issue the permission slip. White people are still willing to do what has to be done, but they have to get a permission slip.
I think that part of the reason, and I don't know how big a part of the problem this reason is, but American men have been chemically castrated by the food corporations. The things they put in food and in the containers that the food is in, phytoestrogens, xenoestrogens, the effect of basically effeminizing men, and a lot of the overweight problems in the United States are due to that, as well as to other hormones that are fed to animals, and then we eat the animals, so we get the hormones too. So there's a lot of that chemistry at work that basically emasculates men.
There's the effeminizing culture.
Yeah, that adds to it as well, yeah. So I think that's part of the problem, and again, I don't know how big a piece of the problem that is, but it's there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, the problem is multifaceted. There's many, many aspects of it. If any of us do survive into the future, I think future historical scholars are going to make whole careers out of nothing but a lifetime study of what the hell happened to the white man and to Western civilization in the 20th and 21st centuries. We all know perfectly well that what we've been doing, which is democracy and law and now the internet, we all know perfectly well it's not working because we can see with our own eyes it's not working. We all know what will work. It looks like, frankly, we're just not going to do it. I think this Dylann Roof kid is a harbinger of things to come, but even if he is, that's not the way to do it. So the blueprint is there. I've laid it out in my Northwest novels. there has to be direct action for change by mature, serious adults, non-dysfunctional, non-crazy adults. We are not going to be saved by funny little men who hear voices in their heads. We are going to be saved by mature, mostly male, white adults who make a deliberate decision in their own mind that there has to be change, and that if they don't do it, it's not going to get done, and it not getting done is not an option. White survival is non-negotiable. Now, once we can take that attitude and we can get enough people taking that attitude, we'll be on our way. But right now, we're in these tiny little circles. We only talk to each other, and
I think another problem what we face is this, well, dispensationalism was one of them. The idea that somehow this magic wand is going to be waved from the supernatural, and we're all going to be saved by that.
Yeah.
That
Deus ex machina. Yeah.
It creates a system of non-action. I mean, if you're going to be saved by some magic wand or supernatural power, then you don't really need to do anything. You need to rely on that. That's the problem. We're not going to be saved by any of that nonsense.
Well, everything the white man sees and lives and experiences, everything he's told, everything he's shown, everything he is told about how he ought to be and how he ought to live, is directed towards making sure that he never actually does anything. When the white man gets pissed off, he's supposed to get on the internet and type a nasty comment on the news blog. Or he's supposed to call Rush Limbaugh and bitch and moan to a talk show host. Or he's supposed to go to the polls and vote Republican, which is about as useless as tits on a bull. But the one thing that the white man must never, never, ever, ever do is do anything. And this is why I think this kid Dylann Roof has so freaked out everybody, including us. I think it's a toss-up as to who he's scared worse, the lefty lib idiots on the left-wing websites or us. The lefty loons have responded by screaming their hatred all over the internet. We've responded by coming up with these weird conspiracy theories to try and explain it away, because it's just impossible that a young white man could actually do something. That's not right. That can't be. I think, honestly, that's our attitude.
Well, did this Roof thing, do you think that's the beginning of the breaking end of the bubble? Or?
Well, it could be. I think... if we could get, say, 1,000 people to come to a public demonstration and hold up the signs and march down the streets, I'd say, fine, we do the demonstrations. We take that 1,000 people and we build from there. But a demonstration, so-called, with 6 people is not a demonstration. And again, because everybody's too terrified to come out because they can't afford to get their pictures on the 6 o'clock news or on the internet and lose their damn jobs. You know, in that sense, what's called economic discipline by the left definitely works. Basically, the reason that most people are so terrified of seeming to support us in any way or using a forbidden word or what is because the system has the power to punish them by taking away their livelihood. That means effectively taking away their home, maybe taking away their family when the wife leaves and takes the kids because you don't have no job no more because you're an evil, wicked racist and you end up living under a bridge. See, it's not illegal. You won't be arrested if you deny the Holocaust or if you say a forbidden word, but that will happen to you, so...
Okay, so what about littering?
That works once or twice. I've noticed, and people that worked with the National Alliance noticed, that you can get away with it maybe once in a given area or given news catchment area, like Denver or Sacramento or whatever the city is. If you do it more than that, they catch on. Now, the first time you do it, first couple of times you do it, you have that symbiotic relationship between you and the Southern Poverty Law Center. Somebody throws leaflets on the ground. Somebody picks up the leaflets and screams and calls the police. Police file a report. The media pick up on it. They will generally either quote one or two sentences from the leaflet if they can find somebody who's willing to speak for the group in question, in this case me, and I've done this. Yeah, I'll send him a comment or give him a comment on the phone, whatever they want. And then, of course, they call Mark Potok at the Southern Poverty Law Center, and he gets to do his spritz. And so the whole symbiotic relationship gets played out again. But you can only do it once or twice. if you keep on doing it, they catch on and they stop the publicity.
Okay, well, you're searching for stuff just to talk about. What do you think about our political relationship to the police? Anything to say about that?
You have to kind of deal with it on a case-by-case basis. I've got a lot of time for ordinary beat cops and ordinary patrolmen who are out on the streets every day, frankly, dealing with the niggers and the drug addicts and the scum. They are pretty solid people, but in most police forces, when you hit sergeant and above, that's when the politics start setting in. That's when, if you want to advance in the department, you have to start kissing the political asses, the minority asses. You have to start showing political correctness. In addition to which, I know a lot of police departments right now, due to all this, you know, Ferguson and Black Lives Matter crap, they're under a lot of pressure to, quote-unquote, diversify. In other words, more and more affirmative action, bringing in incompetent or stupid or downright criminal non-whites, bringing in women, which is another one of the biggest and most poorly kept secrets in American law enforcement, the number of catastrophes that women cops cause on the street because they just aren't physically strong enough to restrain some 6'2" raven drunk.
And they're not intimidating. Yeah. They don't inspire respect.
Yeah.
Like a large male cop would.
Here we go. Here we go. An actual call. Welcome to Radio Free Northwest. Who am I speaking with?
San Francisco, California. Hi, is this Harold?
Yeah, how's it going? We were, in fact, just talking about some of that literature distribution you were doing down there.
Oh, good, good, yeah. Yeah, I'm glad to finally talk to you.
Uh-huh. Yeah, you also have Don Welke here.
What?
Don Welke.
Yeah, we got Don, and you've got Lord Lucan, too.
Oh, good, good. Well, yeah, I just want to say that in order all the supporters like me, what I've done is in addition to the $10 a month to help you as best they can, they should also be giving you the $30 for the subscription, mm-hmm. you know, for the Northwest Observer.
Mm-hmm. Well, officially, the Northwest Observer is included in your dues, but if somebody wants to send in an extra $30, I certainly won't say no.
Yeah. I know it's included in the dues, but I mean, because I know you need help. And
I'm thinking about it, and I know have been desperate for some assistance now there in San Francisco. For those of you who are not familiar with, I'm sure that would be most of you. He's in San Francisco, and we get a lot of this. We get a lot of people who are just totally isolated in some liberal area, either rubbishy because it's too rich or rubbishy because it's too poor and black and brown, and they really need local contacts. So if anyone in listening to this is in the San Francisco area, get in touch with me at nwnet@earthlink.net, and we'll pass it on to Charles, and you might want to meet with him because I realize that can be very risky, so you will be checked out first, but I know Charles is typical of a lot of guys we have working with the Northwest Front. He's very active, and he's all alone. We were talking about lone wolves earlier. Well, you know, this is kind of his situation, so I just figured I'd mention that.
Well, great. Yeah. Well, thanks, Harold. Yeah. I mean, I try to work hard, and I'm glad to support you, and I'm going to be coming home eventually.
Okay.
You know, I've got a few issues, and, you know.
Yeah. I know. You've emailed me about that.
Yeah. So, anyway, great. That's just what I wanted to say. I want to encourage all supporters to include the $30, you know, to help Harold, to help Northwest Front grow and get bigger. Okay. That's what I wanted to say. So.
Okay.
All right. Well, that's all. If there's anything else, I'm glad to call in again. But that's
okay.
All right, Harold. Take care.
Okay.
Thanks for calling.
All right. Thanks.
You're welcome.
Forward.
It was a pleasure. Bye.
Okay. Well, we've now had two calls.
Two people. Yeah. All right. We're on a roll. We have 7 minutes left.